We don't have a chapter that says this is the answer, you know? We don't have that. We have one chapter that says there is a solution. And that's different. A solution is different than an answer. A solution means that a problem can be solved. Like in mathematics, you get a solution to a problem. If you want an answer, maybe you could find Tammy's ex-husband, Jim. He's out of the federal penitentiary now. He's got a haircut. And he says he has the answer. I saw him on TV. I like to watch those guys. He said he had the answer. He was waving the Bible around. He said this was the answer. I don't know if he found that out in the federal pen or whether Jimmy told him that. Or if you really want an answer, you can go out to Tulsa and see Oral. If God is not extorting him for millions of dollars. And if Oral's not there, he's hanging around long enough, his cousin Anal comes by every once in a while. A little attempt at humor there, Terry. Lighten up, will you, for Christ. Well, you see, they have the answer. These people, there's an answer. We don't have that. We have a solution. And one of my troubles, I had lots of troubles, and they're all of my own making. They're all 100% my own mind. I knew there was no solution. I knew that. I knew that like I knew my own name. There was no solution to this. Once it got you, it got you. And that was it. There was no way out of it. I knew that. Oh, I'd heard of AA, and I knew about, you know, that it was very helpful. I know it was very popular and all the rest of it. But as a friend of mine says, I would have gone there, but I didn't have any old clothes. It certainly wasn't going to do something for somebody like me, because I was the only one who did this. I was the only one who experienced these things. I was the only one. There was nobody I could talk to about it, because I was the only one. I knew that. And when I started with myself, well, I'm behind enemy lines. As soon as I start this, you know, start talking to myself, it's really big, big trouble. And this idea of living a spiritual life, that, you know, had no appeal at all to me. But it worked out that this is the easier, softer way. This is the easier, softer way. Some of us look for an easier, softer way. This is it. Just do, follow the steps. Have a sponsor, have a group. I've run into some marvelous people and seen some marvelous, had some marvelous experiences along the way. I'm going to tell you a couple of them. Some years ago, I don't know how long ago, a long time ago, I was speaking in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, at a convention. And the Friday night speaker was a lady who was a Canadian Indian. Her name was Millie. And she was not a beautiful woman. She was a handsome woman. Handsome. And she dressed in native custom. And you wouldn't say she was pretty or anything. She was handsome. She looked like she'd be a statue or something, you know? Gorgeous. Jet black hair. Wonderful. She was then in her 50s, I guess. And this is what she said. She had been living on the reservation. And the chiefs, the council, forced her to leave because she was a disgrace. She was drunk. She was a homewrecker. She was a bit of a slut. And so they told her off, and off she went to live off the reservation. She managed to get a little house over by the Trans-Canadian Highway. It was very bleak up there. She said one Sunday morning she was out sitting on the back steps of her house with the world's greatest hangover. She was really in distress, and she had no money, and she had no liquor, and she had no friends, she had no boyfriend, she had no girlfriend. She was just sitting there suffering, and there was a dog playing in the back of the yard, and the dog was worrying a piece of paper. He was throwing it up in the air and chasing it around, and the dog came over and he dropped it right at her foot. She picked it up. It was in French, and she read French. And it said, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may recover. And she read it. She'd never heard of anything. And she said she read it. Mon Dieu. So she took it into town because there was a priest in town. And in that culture, the priest knew practically everything. So she gave it to Father. And Father said, I've heard of AA, but I don't know anything about it, except I heard something about it. This would be in the 60s, 50s. He said, I'll tell you what, I'm going into the next town to say Mass, and you can come along. It's a bigger town, maybe somebody over there knows. So they got in the car, Father's car, and over they went. And they were a little early, so there was a coffee place, cafe, so they went in to get some coffee, and they were talking about this piece of paper at the counter, drinking coffee. And the counter man came over and stood over them. And the priest looked up at him, and he said, you know about this, what we're talking about? And the guy said, oh yeah. He said, I'm a member of AA. I bought this restaurant 2 days ago. There's another guy in town. We're having our first meeting Tuesday. And Millie went and never had another drink. Now you tell me. Tell me about that. Huh? Tell me about that. You know, Terry makes a fuss over me because I carry a message. A dog can carry this message. See how simple it is? A dog can do it. I don't suppose Millie's even alive now, but I've never forgotten it. A handsome, handsome woman. And another guy, a friend of mine now dead, who's a lawyer from Cleveland, Ohio. People said we looked alike. Handsome rascals. He looked like a lawyer. Bill Manlove, now dead. And Bill had 20 years in AA or thereabouts. He told me this story at one of the conventions. And he went to visit his son, who was in the Peace Corps in Africa. And Bill brought with him a list of meetings and he got from General Service for that portion of Africa. And he met with his son and out somewhere. And they went through the family number. And when that was all over, he said to the son, now, can you find this place out? Wherever it is, I want to talk to the other guy's name there. I want to go to a meeting. So the son, who was not in AA, got the Jeep and off they went. Bill said, through the bush. And finally they pulled in some village. And they asked the name, Wanga Wanga, whatever, you know, where's this guy? And it was said, third hut on the left. And the Bill goes in his seersucker Brooks Brothers with the bow tie, Cleveland, Ohio. And he says, Bill Manlove, Alcoholics Anonymous, Cleveland, Ohio. And this guy comes leaping out of a rocking chair where he's sitting, native, black. He's been sober 9 years. Bill is the first member of AA he's ever met. He got sober through the book and through the loners by writing to Paris. They're in French Africa. Imagine that. 9 years sober. Never met anybody from AA until Bill showed up. And the guy's father was some kind of a hotshot in the tribe. So that night they had a party. Bill was the guest of honor. I hope they didn't kill somebody. They killed something that they were in. Bill was the guest of honor. Imagine Brooks Brothers, seersucker, bow tie. Boom, diddy, boom, diddy, boom. Bunch of Zulus on. Bill says, boy, since I joined AA, I find myself in the goddamnedest places, you know. And here we are in a Benedictine monastery. Not so different. But these are, you know, you go around, you find these things, and I don't want to slack in your area. In my area, there are 400 or 500 AA meetings a week. There's one within 10 minutes of my house every night of the week. And my own group is 10 minutes, and there's another place 10 minutes. And then you think of some guy sitting in Africa for 9 years, you know, waiting for somebody to show up. And he did it. And you and I bitch and moan, you know, the meetings are too long, they're short, the board speakers are boring, the food is crap, you know. Come on, will you? We get to that 10th step. Some people call these the maintenance steps. I don't use that expression. I think that's a poor expression. I don't want to maintain anything. I want to continue to get more. I want it all. I want everything. I want more. I want to be the soberest person who ever lived. As I should be. I want more. I want it all. I don't want to maintain it. And this 10th step, you know, I thought it was like 6 and 7. I thought it was like a resting place, you know? But it's not. And the longer I'm around, the more value I find in the 10th step. And it says continue. And that's what I do. I continue. I continue everything. Everything there is. I continue to admit I'm powerless over alcohol. Because that's the truth of the matter. I am. I'm as powerless now as ever I was. Maybe more. I don't know. If there's degrees of powerlessness, I know I got an awful lot to lose now that I never had to lose before. And I'm not talking about all the things I have, because they can come and they can go, and they have come and they have gone, and I've experienced. I've been rich, I've been poor, you know, I've been through life. Just because we come here doesn't mean we escape the rigors of life, you know. But as I look back, it's a steady onward and upward kind of a thing. It really is. I continue that. I continue to come to believe. And I watch other people come here to believe. I'm of an opinion that even someone who comes back for his only, say, second or third meeting is coming to believe. Why else would he come back if he wasn't coming to believe? Nobody has a gun in our heads. We all come here, we came here to believe, do we not? It's no answer that we say we already believe. Of course we do, but we came here this weekend to believe. There should be no limit, in my belief at least, based on all the experience I've had. I'm not talking about something I think might happen. It's already happened in my life. I remember when I was, if it had been left to me, I probably would have written a script that would have ended 25 years ago. When I got my first really good job. I was about 5 years old when I really got a big job. And I would have thought, that's enough, that's it, I quit, you know. I got mine, I'll go home now, the hell with it. But my sponsor said, this, it gets better. I said, how the hell can it get better than this? I had an office about the size of this room, you know. I said, how's it getting better than this? He said, it gets better. I'm a son of a bitch. And it wasn't that it got better, I got better. You know? I began to understand, for probably the first time in my whole life, I began to understand what's important, what's not important. And all my little plans and my little designs, and they were little, but I thought they were pretty big. I really didn't give a shit after a while. I mean, there's nothing worse than some guy with money telling about the unimportance of money. But I really got to that point where I really didn't give a shit, you know, about the dough. I just wanted to do a good job on what I was doing, and it led to all kinds of things, including a great deal of money. So why wouldn't I continue? My God. Why wouldn't I continue to buy the whole thing? Why would I do anything less? Some guy said, do you think you should cut back on me? So I said, what the hell for? I'm riding a winning horse here now. Why would I change? It seems to me that I will not stay sober any differently than I got sober. And I got sober by going to lots of AA meetings. So I stay sober that way. That's not difficult. I don't miss anything. When I lived in New York, I had a box at Yankee Stadium. I had one at Shea and I had one at the Garden. I didn't miss anything. There are meetings in the morning, there's meetings in the afternoon, there's meetings at night. I got all the ball games. I got anything I want to go to. But I got a meeting every day. And every meeting I went to, I felt a little better. And there's no limit as to how good you can feel. And some days I feel almost peachy keen. So why wouldn't I continue? I'd be silly not to continue. I continue to take personal inventory, as the step says, my inventory. I don't have time to take your inventory. I'm not interested in your inventory anyhow. I'm self-absorbed. The inventory I'm worried about is my inventory. You can't get drunk for me.
you can't get supper for me. I got to do that. Then I wonder about my inventory. I take everything
that spins around me. I'm so self-absorbed. I take it all very personally. You know, I took World War II personally. Trying to interfere with my life as best as. And it wasn't that I gave up the booze. The book says we haven't even sworn off. It just got rid of it. That's all. It just goes. It never was the problem to begin with. And why wouldn't I continue? I tapped in. The book says that I have tapped into a source of power. And that's always been my thing, power. I've always gone after power. I've always wanted to have power. My ego demanded I have power over people, and I'm that kind of a guy. I'm that kind of a guy. And this book says you have tapped into a source of power. And now, and even when I'm not in an adversary business anymore, I'm now, you know, a lawyer up against the forces of evil. But even when you beat me, you didn't beat me. Even when you beat me, you don't beat me. Because I'm tapped into a source of power you haven't got the slightest idea about. You do, but I had some difficulty where I worked a couple of years ago, and I told this boss of mine, I said, I don't care what you do. You can do anything you want, and you'll never beat me. I said, I'm tapped into something you have no idea. Just go away with your little plans. Go away from me. They think you're weird. Maybe I am. But I know where I've been. Huh? You know where we've been. What can they do to us that we didn't already do 100 million goddamn times? Right? So I continue. I continue. And the big book on the 10th step is really marvelous. It says to somebody like me, it says it's easy to rest on your laurels. Now, I'm not quite sure what laurels are, but if you've got some, I'll rest on them. Marshall, what do you got Dear Abby in here? I should mind my own business. Thank you very much. I want to get to this 10th step. Here it is. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. They knew I was coming. Listen to what they tell me. We are headed for trouble if we do. For alcohol is a subtle foe. The creature never sleeps. Cunning, baffling, powerful. It's right out that door. It's sitting out there. And with it is all of the terror and the confusion. The four horsemen of the alcoholic, you remember? Frustration, terror, bewilderment, and despair. And they're old friends, aren't they? And they don't go away because you're sober a long time. They visit. They come, 32 years or not. Every once in a while, it's 4 o'clock in the morning, and one of those bastards are in the room. Terror, frustration, bewilderment, and despair. And that's why I have to come back and say to myself, and as I do, is this important? What I'm doing now, is this important? Why am I awake at 4 o'clock in the morning? Because of that moron boss of mine? That's not important, actually. Say a little prayer. Say thank you. Good prayer. Back to sleep. So I know what's important. You know what's important? This is important. This is important. Our book is very clear on all of this. I hear lots of talk, relationships, lots of talk. Here's what it says, and this is my experience, and I know this to be true. See to it that your relationship with him is right. And great events will come to pass for you and for countless others This is the great fact for us. It's a fact. This is not pie in the sky, I'll see you by and by. This is a fact for us. See to it, your relationship. And it says, obviously you can't transmit something you don't have. No? First you get it, and then you give it. You can't give it till you get it. So the boy in the third grade, he said to the girl, I want what I want when I want it. And she says, you'll get what I got when I get it. A little humor, see? No place. I'm getting no place for her. Listen to this. It says, every day. This is a 10-step. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent upon the maintenance of a spiritual condition. Every day the governor calls up and says he's reprieved. Don't pull the switch. He's got another day. Because alcoholism, that subtle foe, as the book says in another place, surely leads us to the gates of insanity and death. And that's the way it was for my big brother. And he died the way alcoholics do, long way from home, long way from our neighborhood in the Bronx. No family, no friends. Alcoholism took him to that place and killed him. And here you and I sit in this nice warm place with each other, with our friends. That might be the only difference between my big brother and me is you. That's the difference. It's true. It says here, we have entered into the world of the Spirit in the 10th step. And our next function, it says, is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And that has particular application to someone like me, some old guy like me, an old fart. My job is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. I have to understand that AA is a flexible thing, that it changes. It's not the same as it was in 1965. It ought not be the same as it was in 1965. There's no such thing as the good old days. These are the good old days. We have to expand and to grow as the fellowship does. Well, there are limits, of course. But we have to grow in understanding and to be effective. And to be effective means that we're ready for new people. And to be ready for new people has to mean we have to accept the new ideas that come with the new people. And I can't live in 1965 sobriety. Because it's different. Oh, the message is still the same. The message is still the same. In the preface to the third edition, it says that even though Alcoholics Anonymous has increased in breadth and in span, at its core, it says, it still remains the same. It's one alcoholic sharing with another. And that's true, is it not? Sure it is. That's what we're doing here, isn't it? Not one alcoholic is sharing with another. That's how it was with Bill and Bob. That's how it is now. I heard a guy in Florida say a couple of weeks ago, recovery begins when insurance runs out. But that's another problem. It says this should continue for a lifetime. And then you and I are here, are we not, for a lifetime? God willing. God willing. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. That's my inventory. That's my personal inventory. Selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And they come. We are not saints. We are not cured. I can be very selfish. I can be resentful. I can be fearful. It happens. And then the creature comes in the morning. And I remember. And it says, when you're wrong, promptly admit it. Well, this is surely, promptly means surely within a lifetime, I suppose, eh? We don't want to put any real time limits on this, eh? I'll tell you my experience. Here's my experience. I have a very sensitive stomach. And when I blow one, when I'm wrong, I mean, the step says when you're wrong, promptly admit it. It doesn't say when you're mistaken. I went to law school, Tom. I'm going to be like, oh, yeah. I make 100 mistakes a day. That's nothing. What time's the meeting? 8:30 means at 8. That's a mistake. I'm sorry, that covers that. But when you're wrong, promptly admit it. Wrong means wrong, as opposed to right. Wrong means morally wrong. And our book's very clear in all of this. It says the worst thing you and I could do is to interfere with the sobriety or the life of someone else. See? That other crap that you worry about, pride, envy, all the sins and all that, that's childish stuff. But they interfere with someone's life? Not good. Not good. And that's when we say honest, we don't mean just cash register honest. We mean honest, honest. Honest, honest. We mean all of the principles that we're required to practice in all our affairs. So it says. It says when things crop up, we ask God to remove them. Same old stuff. You see, the 10th step has in it the whole first 9 steps. It's not just something you do and get on with it. This wraps up the medicine for the disease of alcoholism is 4 through 10. That's the medicine. 11 and 12 are separate things. We'll talk about those tomorrow. But this wraps up the whole first nine steps plus the 10th step. It says we have ceased fighting anything or anybody, including alcohol. The fight is all over. There's nothing to fight about. I refuse to fight. I don't even have arguments anymore. You want to tell me the world's flat? Good. Fine. The world's flat. Have a nice time. God bless you. That's wonderful. The world's flat. When you leave, I'll say to myself, I'm a moron. However, you won't get me to fight about it. Absolutely not. Because it's not important. This is important. Eh? This is important. When a dog plays a piano, it's not important whether he plays it well. He's playing a piano, for Christ's sake. What the hell do you want, Mozart? You know? And this is all in here. It's all in here. It says this is a miracle. We're not fighting and we're not avoiding temptation. It says we've been placed in a position of neutrality, and that's what it is. It's neutrality. We say in our preamble, we don't endorse any causes, we don't oppose any causes, we don't engage in controversy. Sometimes AAs like to stir up controversy just to stir it up, you know. You've been to a business meeting. They do 3 hours whether they should buy the sweet and low in bulk or in their little packet. What do you mean by the packet? You son of a bitch. They start, you know. Just, please, give me a break. Now I'll tell you the next thing about the 10th step that I think is very interesting. And also I recommend to you the 12 and 12 because it gives you very specific directions on different kinds of inventory. Year-end inventories, spot check inventories, quarterly inventories, written inventories, not written inventories. There's even, for a lot of people, there's even a 10 and a half step, and that is you. Some people, I haven't done this though in a couple of years, not anything about it. There used to be a time when my sponsor still lived, he doesn't live in this country anymore, but when he lived here, I would do a written 10 step on the occasion of my anniversary and give it to him and show him where I was, you know. But that was just something, I don't do it anymore because I don't have him around. I was going like a tenth and a half step. That shows you I'm better than you are. You have 12 steps, I got 12 and a half. What do you think? And I'll tell you the next thing about the 10 step that I think is important. I have been, for a number of years, I've been at a point where I consider prayer and meditation as recreational. I really enjoy, it's the best part of the day. I do it on a very regular basis, and I look forward to it. And I have a routine that I'll talk about tomorrow. It's not much, it's just something I do. But I have found from my experience I can't do it unless I do the 10 step. If I'm mad at you, if I have a resentment, I can't pray. I can't do it. If I have a resentment, I certainly can't meditate. There's no way. Because if I sit down, I'll meditate on you, you son of a bitch. And I'll plan my revenge, which will be very painful. Very, very painful when I'm finished with you, you bastard. Our Father, it doesn't work. And in the book, 12 and 12 on this, says that each practice and every system of thought that has ever been, including religious systems of thought, have always included in it a component of self-examination and of amends. It's always. And prayer and meditation is part of every religious system. And so is this self-examination. And our own book says, taken separately, they are very powerful. That is the practice of self-examination. Where was I wrong? That's very powerful. Plus the prayer and meditation. But together, there's a synergism that makes it twice as powerful, twice as effective. And so I look forward to the 10th step because it clears my way to the 11th step. And without the 10th step, based on my experience, I have a hard time with the 11th step. I have a hard time praying. I have a hard time meditating. I don't know much about meditating anyhow, but the little I do, I have a hard time with, especially if, and with me, it's always resentment. I always seem to have something going on. Someone has offended me. My ego has been hurt in some peculiar way that only I know about. But it's all part of the overall plan to get me, you know. You don't have to be paranoid to harbor these thoughts. And I am also paranoid. But I find a 10th step is an enormous benefit. And so I recommend it to you. Continue. Please continue. And I know this is the choir I got here. You know. Just continue to be as you are. Thank you.
We're listening with a moment of silent meditation followed by the serenity prayer, please. Thank you, God.
Grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
My name is Ray O'Keefe. I'm an alcoholic. And I add my thanks to those that already said thank you. I'm not going to review the first 9 steps or the first 10 steps, but I'm going to talk about the 11th step. In our book, which I continue to quote, it states the issue very simply. It says, God is or he isn't. What is our answer to be? See, religion says God is or isn't, and here's the answer, and they give you the answer. God is a 34-year-old Jewish gentleman who died, came back, etc., etc. We don't do that. We say he is or he isn't. What is your answer to be? What is your answer to be? My answer is very simple. He certainly is, or I wouldn't be here. And I know that. And this 11th step is, it says, if you're interested in words, it's got 32 words. It's got more words in it than any other step, if words interest you. And it says that these men and women who founded this program sought to improve their conscious contact with God, praying only for knowledge of his will for them and the power to carry that out. Now, there are two things to do with the 11th step. The first, on prayer and meditation, is a practice of doing it. And in my own case, it's when I think of it, and I think of it a lot, It's really a transformation from powerlessness to some type of an orderly, manageable life, even sometimes with some type of power in it. And for most, I think my life, when I think back on it, as I hope to, is certainly a gift. It's an answered prayer. And sometimes it's a song. It's fun. I have fun. Lots of times I have fun. I've had fun here over the weekend. I've had fun. And it's an answered prayer. And everything I've asked for, and I never asked for that much, I certainly got it. And I got it in abundance. And that's the practice of prayer. I was only here for, you know, like most of us, I was only here for a week or so. I don't remember. But very soon. And he said to me, we pray around here. That's what he said. And I said, I don't pray. I wasn't trying to be wise or anything. It was just a statement. In fact, I did not pray. I didn't have the habit of prayer. I wasn't for it. I wasn't against it. It wasn't part of my life. I didn't need prayer. I needed money. I needed power. I needed sex. You know, this prayer is not involved in these areas. Well, he said, you will, brother. You will pray. And he was right, of course. And he said, I should start by asking for help. Someone said that here this morning at the meditation. He said, just ask for help in the morning and say thank you at night. Inoffensive. Even if I had a position against prayer, that would be inoffensive. But I didn't have any fixed position on it one way or the other. So I said, help in the morning, and I said thank you at night. And I guess it helped. I don't know. But I said it, and after a while I expanded my prayer life. I said, help me today, and thank you very much. And you can't hang around here very long without running into all of this stuff. You know, in a matter of months, I was into the third step prayer. In another matter of months, I was into the seventh step prayer. And every meeting I went to, there was the serenity prayer and the Lord's prayer. I mean, there was prayer all around the place. But this is a practice of prayer, because I didn't get to the 11th step until I had completed the first 10 steps. And when I completed the first 10 steps, then I went to the 11th step. And when I went to it as a prayer, as always, he said, the first thing you do is look at the words and try to find out, we call it in law, the original intent of the framer of the prayer. And it says, we sought, you and I were seekers. We're not finders, we're seekers. We don't have the answer to anything. We're not a body of theologians who have answers to very, very deep questions. We have a solution to a very specific problem, the problem of alcoholism. But we're seekers. And I suppose that's a nice way to describe me as a seeker. I have some other ways to describe me, probably a little more accurate, but I'm very intellectually curious, and I was always questioning things, not too much, but I questioned my teachers a great deal, and I used to get in trouble because I was a scholarship student. I wasn't supposed to be asking so many questions. But around here, the question of seeking is very important, because what we're seeking is knowledge of God's will for us. And sometimes that's a very elusive concept. I started out, first of all, thinking about meditation. As I told you, I have a Catholic education, and they might have mentioned meditation somewhere along the line, but I didn't get it. I knew about prayer all right, but I had absolutely no experience with meditation. I thought I had an idea, like most of my great ideas, wrong, that it was somehow Eastern. It was Eastern. It was Buddhist or Hindu or something like that, and so I went to my sponsor, and I said, I need to learn how to meditate. And he said, take the 12 and 12, which is here, and read it. So I read it, and it says in the 12 and 12, for beginners in meditation, and that's me, we found it helpful to read the prayer of St. Francis several times slowly. At the meeting this morning, it was read twice. So I read the prayer of St. Francis several times slowly. and I don't want to be an AA heretic, but the prayer of St. Francis depresses me terribly. Because I'm just the opposite of Francis. I would much rather get than give. I would much rather be loved than loved. I'm a taker. Francis was a giver. And I had to stop with Francis. I said to my spouse, I don't want to fool around Francis anymore. Francis makes me nervous. People like Francis around, a guy like me doesn't have a shot, you know? Now I'm going to tell you what I did. And this is what I did. And it took several years, but this is what I did. I'm a voracious reader. And I was reading a book by a man named Kelly, the title of which I forget. This is 25 years ago. And Kelly, improbably enough, was a Quaker. And I liked whatever I was reading, so I looked in the phone book and I found out where the Quakers were, where I lived, and they were right up the road. And I went up there and I sat, I never became a Quaker, but I went and sat with the Quakers for 3 or 4 years. And the Quakers are my kind of a religion. They have no clergy, and they have no services. That's right up my alley. And you sit for an hour in this place. Anyhow, you sat. It was a very lovely building. It was in Rye, New York, very lovely town. And you sit in this 17th century building for 1 hour. And some of the people would be moved to say things. You wouldn't believe it of me. I sat for 3 or 4 years and never said anything. I just sat. Well, what I learned to do was sit. I learned to sit, and as they say, I learned to center down. That is to clear away my mind. And I sat with the Quakers, and I learned to do that. And then my sponsor said, "Well, once you clear your mind, what do you do?" I said, "What do you think I should do?" He said, "Why don't you think about what you can do for AA? Instead of meditating and contemplating your navel, why don't you see what you can do for AA?" And I was in an AA group then. We had maybe 7 or 8 people was all. And we had an old guy, Dixie, who used to make coffee in one of those aluminum pitchers from the Navy, Jerry. You know, those aluminum terrible things. And Dixie would dump in half a jar of instant and some hot water, and that would be coffee. That was enough to kill you. So I bought a Mr. Coffee. I meditated on what crap that coffee was. And I bought for my group a Mr. Coffee. Remember Joe DiMaggio, $12.85? And we had real coffee. And I like coffee. Would you give me a little coffee right now? What a nice gussie. We're very close. We're having a mutual spiritual experience this weekend. Look at it, she's
I don't know anything about him.
Anyhow, I bought a Mr. Coffee. And this is the way I meditate. I meditate. Now, 1 year... this may not be very spiritual, but it's the way I meditate. And 1 year, I was beginning to move around, and I was invited to Philadelphia to speak at a breakfast they had down there. And it was a central thing, and it was in one of the big hotels. And they had a couple of thousand people at this breakfast. I was the speaker, and I went back up to New York that night. And I went to the group, and I told them where I'd been. And they called it the Unity Breakfast. And I told them what I had been doing. And about 2 weeks later, we had a practice in that group of group meditation. We used to sit around and just meditate because we did the steps once a week. And when we got to the 11th step, we tried to meditate. And that came up, and a fellow named Harry, who's now dead, came and he said, "I think we should have a breakfast." And so we started it. And it continues. In fact, it's being held this very morning, this day. And the good Hillary spoke at it some years ago. It's a big event. We have 2,500 people. Now that's because Harry decided to meditate on how he could make his group a more effective group and what he could do for AA in that area. And I suggest to you that's a way, at least that's the way I learned how to meditate. Prayer is a different thing. Prayer is something I knew about. Prayer is when you go through the Catholic schools, as I did, you come up with lots of prayer. I knew prayer. Thank you very much, Terry. I had prayer in English. I had prayer in Latin. I had prayer in French. I knew all of the words. I had very little of the music. My prayer were rote prayers. I could rattle them off for you, anything you want. You know, I live in the Bronx, and we prayed for our Cardinal Archbishop. We used to pray for the crops. Nothing much grown in the South Bronx. The Italians had some marijuana up the street, but the Irish weren't growing anything. But, oh, Lord, give us bountiful crops. Amen, brother, you know. And I knew all of these things. We prayed for the intention of our Holy Father, the Pope. We prayed for the conversion of Russia. See, and it worked. Here they are, 1997. They're welcome. They have AA there, so they're practically converted now. These are the kind of prayers I knew about. And my sponsor said, well, you got to read the words of the step. You see, this step says, you pray only for knowledge of God's will for you. Only. Pray for knowledge of God's will for you. It's something you pray for and something I seek after. It isn't something I know. I don't know God's will for you or for me or for anybody else. How would I know God's will? I have no idea. I don't know anybody who knows God's will except God. I think I know where I've been for 32 years. And unless I've been doing the right thing or close to it for 32 years, I have wasted a life of that. I don't like to think I have. I've learned to pray differently around here. And I've learned, meditation too. Our book says, ask him in your morning meditation what you can do for the new man who suffers. Remember that? It says the answers will come if your own house is in order. There's no point trying to clean up the world unless you clean up yourself, you know? Before there was a program, before there was a book, before there were steps, before there were today, before there were anything, there was trust God, clean house, help others. It hasn't changed that much. All of this process here of prayer and meditation is not to turn us into Francis of Assisi, or even close to Francis of Assisi. It's to make us sober, effective members of Alcoholics Anonymous who continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And we ask for knowledge of God's will. I don't know God's will. I'll tell you this, I've been going to an AA meeting every night for 32 years. And I hope that's God's will, in conformity with God's will. And that's easy because that's where the power is. The power is in the AA meeting. And that's the power I get to carry out God's will. Knowledge of God's will, I go to the meeting. Our book says, deep down in every man, woman, and child, the book says, there is the fundamental idea of God. Oh, we cover it over with calamity, with pomp, as I did. But deep down, it says, that's where we founded, we 100 or so men and women who recovered from alcoholism. And it says in the very simplest way, it was so with us. When they sought God, it was not a long, circuitous trip. It was a near goal. God was in them. God was in them. Each and them. And so if I need to interact with God, I just need to interact with you. If I need a vision of God, I look at you. If I need to get closer to God, I get closer to you. If I need guidance and instruction, I come to a meeting. How many times have you, in your AA life, gotten instruction at a meeting without even asking for it? And from the most improbable source, that moron over there, all of a sudden something pops out of his mouth. He say, holy shit, he's on pills. How many times do you know the anecdote about how we got the name of the program in the book? You remember that? They went, Bill Wilson and the rest of them, and they were at a meeting right in the Kips Bay group in Lower East Side Manhattan, which is only a block from Bellevue. And they brought in a bunch of guys from Bellevue for the meeting. They were sitting around. One of those people was a former editor of the New Yorker. And Bill had sent to Washington to find out a title for this book they had roughed out. And they sent him somebody down to the Library of Congress, and they had studied some titles. They had The Way Out, They found there were like 9 books for the way out. There was one called Desperate Men. Bill, of course, had the Wilson method. He thought that might be an appropriate title. And then he said, we're going to call it Anonymous Alcoholics. And this guy came out of his coma and said, you've got it backwards. Call it Alcoholics Anonymous. And he immediately reverted back into his coma and was never heard from again. And that's how we got, that's an anecdote, I wasn't there, but that's the anecdote about how we got the name of Bubba. It comes from a very improbable source, you know. That's why I don't rush to judgment too well, too quick, because you don't know. You don't know who sits at that table, who you're dealing with, what's going to pop out of his mouth. You know, he may not even be a lawyer, and he'll make sense. You don't believe that, do you? Tell you, no, no, no. Isn't it terrible? I'll tell you, I've learned to pray sort of a different way. Here, there's nothing wrong with the prayers I knew. They're all fine. I still know them. I don't say them, but I know them. And recently somebody sent me an audio tape of hymns that Catholics sang when I was young. And I'd listen around to that stuff. It's great how it comes back. Anyhow, I'm going to tell you a couple of ways I pray. Now, I don't know if this is going to be of any help to you at all, because this is just what I do, and I don't know whether it will help anybody other than myself. Here's a prayer. Now, these go very fast, so you got to pay attention. You ready for this one? This is one. It's quick. Show me the way. Show me the way. Show me the way. I'll tell you how it is many, many times. Many, many times. I'm bright. I know what I want. I know where I want to go. I know what I want to achieve. I know that. And I know these things that I want and want to achieve are good for me and maybe even good for somebody else, but primarily I'm interested in me. But many times, I don't know how to do it. I don't know how to do it. I don't know how to get to where I want to go. I know where I want to go, but I don't know how to get to where I want to go. So I say, show me the way, please. Please show me the way. Show me the way. I think it fits in, certainly with the third step, maybe with the second step. Show me the way. And sometimes there is no way. Sometimes there isn't a way, and I don't hear anything. I'm not schizoid yet, but I realize after a while there is no way, and I better rethink this one. And maybe it's not a very good idea after all. Other times I say, show me the way, and a way is shown to me. Knock on the door, it says, and it will be opened to you. And this is true in my experience. And I've had all kinds of things and opportunities and not opportunities and missed opportunities. And places where I really needed direction. Where I was making what I thought was big ideas. Big changes, or something like that, something you really give some thought to. And I just ask, show me the way. Show me the way. I have another prayer I use all the time. I use it constantly. I've used it all this weekend. I'll probably use it all the way home. It's very, very fast, this prayer. It goes like a zoop. You ready? Here it is. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That's it. I have this idea. All of my ideas are good ideas. Here comes God into his office in the morning, and he says to who's ever been working nights, what do they want? And the guy says, well, they want 50 million guys want money. Another 50 million guys want cars. They all want their wives destroyed. But there's one guy in Miami, he keeps saying thank you. And God says, give him anything he wants. Don't you think he gets so tired of listening to all of that? You know, God, the cars, the women, the jobs, the money. Say thank you. Thanks a lot. I tell you, I have 7 children. One of them, girl, is the greatest donee I've ever met. This kid was the greatest recipient of a gift I've ever run into. And I would, you know, you give them stuff and Christmas, and so everybody gets a bike. And the boys all disappear on their bikes to show their friends their bikes. They're gone. And you have to go, and here's this kid driving around the circular driveway. What a bike I got. Oh, my daddy gave me this bike. What a daddy, he gave me this. And she go on and on and on. And you know, he's supposed to treat her. I think she got a little more. And they'd all come home later when they're over the college vacation. She always had that smile. The kids used to call her that shit-eating grin of hers. They used to get mad at her. Because, oh, I'd slip her a little, you know. Daddy's a little girl. Shh. And the first thing she got, she got a little extra. Maybe it works that way. What do you think? Maybe it works that way. But 12 and 12 is very good on this. In fact, in 11 and 12, the 12 and 12 is really, I think it's superior to the big one. Especially in 11 and 12. But listen to this. We discover that we receive guidance for our lives to just about the extent we stop making demands upon God to give it to us on order and on our terms. Almost any experienced AA will tell how his affairs have taken remarkable and unexpected turns for the better as he tried to improve his conscious contact with God. He will also report that every season of grief and of suffering, when the hand of God seemed heavy or even unjust, new lessons for living were learned, new resources of courage were uncovered, and finally, inescapably, the conviction came that God does move in mysterious way his wonders to perform. And I am an experienced AA, and I'm here to tell you that that's true. And sometimes the road is a little rough, you know? Not too long ago, well, about 15 years ago, there was an extremely good possibility that I would be blind. I had 9 surgeries on my eyes, all in the course of maybe 4 or 5 years. And I can see. But there was a real possibility I'd be blind. Scared the life out of me. And I have my own 12 and 12 I have home. And these portions, I have the dates in there of the surgery that I was in. I took it in the hospital with me. I didn't ask for anything special. I said the third step prayer, I said the seventh step prayer, I said the serenity prayer. I didn't ask for anything special about the eyes. I just said, let me handle whatever I get. And what I got was pretty good. These are not so bad, eh? They're new, very nice. And sometimes the hand of God seems heavy. And sometimes the recovery from something like that is very slow. And we all know people who have something. And we've all had something, have we not? We've all had something. There's always something going on in our life. It's not a bowl of cherries all the time. It will not be, it is not. But that's our trick is we are constant. Not consistent, we are constant in our trick. We are constant in our prayer. We say, thank you. Thank you. Some nights you gotta say it, all right, you know, thank you. That's very cute, you know. Keep this shit up, you won't hear from me. St. Teresa said to him, if this is the way you treat your friends, it's no wonder you have so few. Yeah? But it's, you and I have all of, we have all these tools. We have all these tools. And I spoke to you yesterday about this emotion I've always had, and I don't have it much anymore. In fact, probably don't have it at all. But it was so strong with me, this idea of not belonging, you know, not fitting in, there being something the matter. Always, there was something always the matter with me. That I wasn't as good as you, or my clothes weren't as good, I wasn't as smart, I wasn't as rich, I wasn't... And the truth of the matter, I was as smart, I was as rich, and I wasn't as everything, but I didn't feel that way. And I felt the whole lifetime, I'm outside looking in. There's something the matter. Why the hell, you know? And booze helped with that. Booze helped with that. I drank some booze. I was better than you. I was better than everybody. Fuck you. What do you think of that? You smile, I'll smack you. You know, the false bravado and bombast and bullshit that booze brings on, barroom crap. But here, it's a different thing. And when I didn't have an immediate awakening of my spirit, it took some time. But after I was here for a while, I began to fit in. And I began to think, it's okay for me to go there. Huh? It isn't so much that you do me the great honor of asking me to do this stuff over the weekend. Let me tell you the truth of the matter. I belong here. Easy enough. I belong here. Where else would I be but here? It's okay for me to be here, isn't it? It's all right with you? Sure. I belong. Not a big deal. I belong. And it comes from here. It comes from this communication I have with you and with God on a daily basis. And here's what it says. Someone read this morning. It says, perhaps, you see how definite we are, we're real theologians here. Perhaps one of the greatest rewards of meditation and prayer is the sense of belonging that comes to us. We no longer live in a completely hostile world. We are no longer lost and frightened and purposeless. The moment we even glimpse God's will, even a glimpse of God's will, the moment we begin to see truth, justice, and love as the real and eternal things in life, we are no longer deeply disturbed by all the seeming evidence to the contrary that surrounds us in purely human affairs. We know, see, we know that God lovingly watches over us, and we know that when we turn to Him, all will be well with us here and hereafter. That's what it says. And that's true. That sense of belonging has come to me. It's all right for me to be here with you. It's okay. Isn't it? Sure it is. In Comes of Age, they quote a poem here. Imagine one of our books has a poem in it. And it's a poem that I learned in school. I learned it in school because I went to Catholic schools. And the poet is a Catholic. There aren't that many Catholic poets around. But when you go to Catholic schools, they fish out all the Catholic poets and you got to read them. And this guy was not only a Catholic, but he was a failed cleric. He had attempted the clerical life and had failed. Because he was an alcoholic and he was a drug addict. And they expelled him from the training where he was, the seminary where he was. And he gravitated to the worst part of London. He gravitated to the Limehouse district, down by the docks, where he got a hold of the opium as it came off the ships from China. And it was London's equivalent of the Skid Row. And he lived there for a period of time. And he finally, through the grace of God, and I suppose a lot of his own efforts, got himself out of that situation, got himself back, and he was living in a monastery. He never became a priest, but he wrote poetry. And he wrote a poem about his name was Francis Thompson. And he wrote a poem about his relationship with God. And in poetic imagery, he pictured God as a large dog. Unusual, huh? He pictured him as an enormous hound. Big hound, like an Irish wolfhound. One big thing. And he wrote about how this hound used to follow him around everywhere he went. And we tried to get away from this dog, and the dog wouldn't give up. The dog just kept coming after him. And the dog is God, and this is what Francis said about him. He said, I fled him down the nights and down the days. I fled him down the labyrinthine ways of my own mind. And in the midst of tears, I hid from him. And under running laughter and up vistaed hopes I sped. But with unhurrying chase and unperturbed pace, with deliberate speed and majestic instancy, they beat, and a voice beat, more instant than those feet.
All things betray thee, who betray me. I won't tell you all about, you know, I'm not going to read it all, it's too long, but I want to get to the very end of it. And God comes face to face with Francis. And Francis comes face to face with God. Finally, the dog has got him. And God says to Francis, human love needs human meriting. How have you merited? Of all man's clotted clay, you are the dingiest clot. Alas, you know not how little worthy of any love you are. Who will you find to love you? Save me, only me. And this I find consoling. God says to Francis, all which I took from thee, I did but take. Not for your harms, but just that you might seek it in my arms. All which your child's mistake fancies as lost, I have stored for thee at home. Rise, take my hand, and come. You see, I thought, maybe you did, that everything I lost was lost. That everything that alcoholism took from me was gone. I thought it was gone. I thought my teaching career was gone, my self-respect was gone, my brain was gone, my family was gone. I thought all that stuff was gone. It wasn't gone at all. It was right here. All the time. He started here at home. And in due time, they said, there's your teaching over there. Go get it. So I went over there and I got the teaching. And they said, there's your house over there. Go get that house. And there's Florida, and here's North Carolina, and there's Coleman, Alabama. Was here all the time. All the time. Didn't go anywhere. I was the only one that moved. Nothing else moved. God stayed there. And right at the very, very end, he says to Francis, and this has got to be great. This has got to be great. He says to him, ah, fondest, blindest, weakest, I am he whom thou seekest. So, once again, we seek God, we seek. And this idea and this sense of belonging that comes to us, it comes, to me, it comes from association with you. And a great part of that association is prayer and meditation that we do together, you and I. We've already met this morning. We've already prayed together. And prayer is a great thing. It always has been, but communal prayer is even stronger. One-on-one is fine. Our book tells us, though, you have to be careful. It says, don't be careful on going spiritual matters alone. You know? Because I'm fanciful. Perhaps you are, too. And sometimes, you know, people get very strange messages from God. You wonder, you know. Some guy was 6 months ago, I'm getting divorced. Oh, really? Yeah, God told me to. Oh, shit. That kind of stuff. And it's easy to check it out one with the other, isn't it? Just ask. God knows we have so many amateurs around. We got amateur doctors, amateur lawyers, amateur everything's here. You'll get a million opinions. Somehow. And the idea here is a very simple one. It's communication with God. And ever since mankind began to consider this idea that there was something outside of us, greater than us, even something that caused and operated the universe. When David came out of his little cave there on the desert and looked up at that sky. Have you ever seen a desert sky? Have you ever been to sea and seen the sky at sea? And David looked up at all of that and he sang his little song on his harp and he said to the God of his understanding, who am I that you are mindful of me? I'm so small. Everything else is so big, so enormous, and you yet are mindful of me. You and I, as members of Alcoholics Anonymous, more than anyone else,
I think, more than anyone else, should be mindful of the fact that God watches over us. And that's what it says here. And then we have a tradition that gives us the outline of a God that will watch over us. So it says a loving God that will watch over us and assure us that everything is going to be all right with us here and hereafter. And all of these steps that we have, these 12 steps, I think are all prayers. This one, by its very terms, is a prayer. I don't know whether prayer is a form of meditation or meditation is a form of prayer, and I don't much care. I think we meditate and pray for the same things. There's no point in meditating for one thing and praying for another. You know, meditate for knowledge of God's will. Most people would agree, I think, that if you had the opportunity to know God's will, God would say, I would like it if you stayed in AA. And that's not a difficult thing. I keep saying to you, there are no mountains to climb here. It's just a path that we go along. We do the right thing, we do the next right thing, we do the next right thing, and pretty soon, you know, well, maybe it would be nice if they gave us a map, huh? Maybe we should have a chart. After 2 years, you're pretty good. After 5 years, you're very good. After 32 years, you are goddamn wonderful. And an inspiration to all. Yeah. And then we'd know, wouldn't we? But we don't have that. We have one day at a time. That's what they keep telling us. One day at a time. That's a difficult lesson to learn. But when we pray, you and I, we pray that way, don't we? We say, give us our daily bread. Huh? I say, show me the way. Please show me the way today. When I get to that seventh step, as I said last night, I often say, let me be a good member of AA today. That's all. And that involves a lot. It involves going to the meeting, trying to be a nice guy. I find that I'm not such a bad guy at AA meetings. It's when a meeting is all over that I go into spasms and start running around like a fool, you know. But then I wouldn't steal your chair, and I'd probably get you a coffee if I thought about it. But it's when I go to work, I start kicking people around, you know, that kind of stuff. But that's another story. Now, once again, it seems to me we are seekers, you and I. And what we seek is a very close goal. It isn't far away. And we seek to have a relationship with God. A relationship with God simply means that we know Him and He knows us. And like any other relationship, we talk to Him and He talks to us. We communicate. Isn't that the basis of any relationship? Any relationship you may care to have, a business relationship, a social relationship, a sexual relationship. At the core of it is communication. Correct? Correct. There's no point in having another kind of a relationship unless there is communication. Sex and sex, you know, if sex were just a sex act, that's, you know, what's that? It's the communication before doing that. That's really the pleasure of it all. Business is the same thing. You have to communicate. Everybody's got to know. Everybody's got to be on the same page. Or you go across purposes in business. And it's no different here, in my experience. And that's what this is. And there are many times in my life, there are many times in your life, where I can't get in touch with you. I try, but I can't get you. You have things to do, you're off on one of your own, I'm trying to run mine, and I can't find you to ask you what you think of what I intend to do, or what do you think I should do, what do you think I should not do, which is often the case. But God is always available. And I can always send up a message, you know, show me the way. Help. Again. In all of these years, I do not recall a day when I did not need God's help. I cannot remember a day. in my AA time, that I didn't need God's help for one thing or the other. And I've learned not to pray impossible prayers. I've learned that. I've learned that through life. I remember being in school with the good sisters, and one time I was praying that Rio de Janeiro be the capital of Portugal. Sister asked me, the capital of Portugal. I wrote on the paper, Rio de Janeiro. If Rio de Janeiro is not the capital of Portugal, I'm screwed. And it's not. And sister let me know that. She bounced that ruler off my head. It's not the capital of Portugal. Boom, O'Keefe. I'll tell you another story. One time I lived in the South Bronx. We all lived in five-story walk-ups. And the O'Keefes lived in the back, and there were six of us in three rooms. And I was on the street one day, and some kid in the neighborhood, it was Easter. We were off school, and some kid in the neighborhood had a rabbit. He was walking around with this rabbit. It was a live rabbit, white, bunny. Oh, my God. I saw that thing. It really blew me away. He had Easter bunny. My, I said, where do you, and he told me you could get them down somewhere. Well, I knew I was going to get an Easter bunny. I was a Catholic school kid. I was in like the fourth grade, fifth grade. So I went up to the church. I needed a rabbit. I went to church, and I did the Stations of the Cross. This is a very considerable enterprise for a Catholic. You're all around the church. You're up, down, down the aisle, up around the aisle. Here we go, down here. It's a 45-minute option. For a kid in the sixth grade, I'm killing myself with the Stations of the Cross here. But when I finished them, and I did, I knew, like I knew my name, that I was going to get a rabbit. Because any six-year-old, sixth-grade kid who does the Stations of the Cross gets a rabbit. I knew it. So I went home to my mother, my poor alcoholic Irish mother, the widow O'Keefe. And I said, I need a rabbit for Easter. And she threw me down a flight of stairs. Get out of here with no rabbits. What are you, crazy? And I became an early apostate. I'd kill myself talking to God to get a rabbit, and I didn't get one. Now look, it's okay for a kid in the sixth grade to pray for a rabbit. That's all right. Huh? What the hell? It's no good for a 40-year-old man to pray for rabbits. Because you're not going to get the goddamn rabbit. Forget about it. Right? Bo Derek is not coming by my door. I can't even get Terry to come by. Right, the door's open, the window's open, nothing's happening. And I've learned not to pray that way. You know? Not to put God in that, you know, get me out of this. Huh? How many times did we break that deal? Get me out of this and I'll never do it again. Oh, shit, you're out. You did it on the way home. Am I out? Yeah, good. Is that a bar across the street? Good. I'm awful thirsty. I've been in there for 16 hours. Yeah. That's not the way to do it. The way is to show me the way. You show me the way. It says we have to stop giving God orders in here. To give it to us on our orders and on our terms. Because that's not the way it works. That's not the way the system works. You don't go to your own father and tell him on your order, in your terms, you will give me this, you will give it to me on Tuesday at 11 o'clock, and then on Wednesday you'll give me something else. My kids ever pull that crap on me, they're in bad shape. I'll tell you, they'd live 1,000 years and I'd never give it to them. So, that's what I think about the 11th step. I'll tell you what I think it is. I think the 11th step is the powerhouse of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it's the powerhouse. I think all of the power in the program, in the steps, that begins with the admission of powerlessness and starts down like a snowball going down that hill, it comes to rest here in the 11th step.